Professor Barry Shube. Prof, good afternoon to you. Are you there?
Yes, good afternoon, Simon. Hi.
Prof, yesterday the technology gremlins were doing their thing. Today, hopefully, we will finish our discussion because we didn't quite manage to do that yesterday. We were getting to the interesting point where we were going to talk about why it is that people need to manufacture conspiracy theories to explain scientific facts.
Yeah. Thanks, Simon. Yes, yesterday technology was against us. Thanks for allowing me to just round off our discussion on myths, misinformation, breakthroughs, conspiracy theories. You know, I gave quite a few examples, just I won't go through them now. But as you say, the main thing is, why do people go for myths, misinformation, and so on? I think, you know, clearly with the corona epidemic, there's a great deal of uncertainty. And people, I think, feel a lack of control. I think in themselves there's a feeling of a lack of control. And probably more so, I think there's a feel that the authorities don't have a complete control of the situation. So it's natural that they're going to just turn to theories and speculations and ideas and myths to try and make sense of it all. And there's plenty of that going around. I myself have been, as I mentioned yesterday, assailed with myths and misinformation and so on. You know, it may well be that the scientific community are just not doing their job adequately, and scientists are known for not being great communicators. But the problem is that scientists, or so the scientific or medical scientific, is actually outnumbered and outgunned, really, by the alternate practitioners. I think we've seen this with the anti-vaccination lobby, where there's something like 350 alternate internet sites compared to just a handful of authentic good vaccination sources. And I think we're probably starting to see this also with the corona epidemic as well. I think what adds to the confusion is that there's uncertainty even in the scientific community. As I keep on saying, we're still in the learning curve. So a lot of what we know about the epidemic does change, recommendations even change. I think that also adds to uncertainty. So we're seeing like lockdown protagonists and lockdown antagonists. Also, I think what is also a problem with is that there's a lot of number crunching. The actuaries are also, you know, picking on numbers and kind of extrapolating from those numbers. I think one of the important problems is that there is a sort of a kind of a downplaying of the severity of the disease. And people say, look, it's just a bad flu. And it really is not. I think it's just taking numbers out of context, which is again also adding to confusion. I think an important thing, the bottom line, is to sort out fact from fiction. I think it's important that people must look at the source of information. Where does that information come from? Is it coming from an authentic, validated, true source? Is it coming from people that have a relevant background? And I'm saying relevant background because, you know, even with the HIV epidemic, we've seen that there are two Nobel Prize winners who are AIDS denialists who say there's no such thing as AIDS, that HIV doesn't cause AIDS. These are Nobel Prize winners, but in a completely different field. And I think now there's also a Nobel Prize winner who said, a prize winner, who's also an anti-lockdown protagonist, just saying
the Israeli guy.
Oh, yeah, an ex-South African fellow, in fact. But these are people in the field.
I was going to raise him with you. I was going to raise that issue because, I mean, I'm acutely aware of the importance and the responsibility we as media have in communicating fact and not buying into this whole conspiracy thing. But, Prof, when I pick up newspapers and news sources and I'm looking for what is ostensibly a legitimate source, and I see that a Nobel Prize winner in science in Israel is stating that lockdown is counterproductive, what do you do with that information? I don't have the tools to distill what's truth and what isn't.
Yeah, that is a problem. But that particular person is not a virologist or an epidemiologist. He's a chemist. And he's got a great track record in chemistry. He's a Nobel Prize winner in chemistry. But he's not a virology epidemiologist. And I think that the source must come from a person that's experienced, has got a background, has got a knowledge in what is relevant.
Yeah,
we actually see this HIV, as I mentioned before. There's actually a well-known Nobel Prize winner who's an AIDS denialist. There's no such thing as AIDS. There's no such thing as HIV causing AIDS. And he's a Nobel Prize winner, but again, in a completely different field. So unfortunately, we do get these there are actually two of them, in fact. We do get these maverick opinions. There's actually a Nobel Prize winner. In fact, the guy that discovered the HIV virus, who's of the opinion that the coronavirus was manufactured in a laboratory in China. That's not a natural infection. So, you know, we kind of get, you know, these kind of things which, you know, people get very, very confused. And it's a problem. I think we are at fault, because I think we don't communicate enough to the public. And I think, I think this is where these myths and conspiracy theories come from.
That's where we leave it, Prof, because it's 4:30. But as always, thank you. That is interesting. So you're saying a lack of control is what's leading us to need to find answers. And that'll do it.
Good communication.
Prof, Shabbat Shalom. Thanks for the input this week.
Shabbat Shalom to you and all everybody. Thanks.